Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Breaking news tonight, manhunt after a Florida mom carjacked in broad daylight at a busy intersection. And it does not have a happy ending. Mommy's Dodge Durango found a few short miles away on fire. Mommy's body riddled with bullets inside. The only clue? A green Acura. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories, and I want to thank you for being with us.
911, do you need police, fire, or medical?
I don't need anything, but there's a guy going down East Lake Drive in Seminole County with, he was chasing a car, hit the car, got out of his car with a hood over his face and had a machine gun, it looked like, got in the car with the other guy, and then the car that he got out of did a U-turn, went back down East Lake Drive, and they're headed back towards 1792.
Every mom's worst nightmare, you're in your car alone or worse with your children, and out of nowhere, somebody behind you bumps your car, you stop, next thing you know, you're carjacked. I will never forget the first carjacked murder case I investigated and tried. Just out of the blue, you can't see it coming. This mom at an intersection, a red light, a busy intersection in broad daylight, but from behind, the next thing you know, she's carjacked. Listen.
It's a green Acura, and it's East Lake Drive and Tuscarora Road, but they're headed back towards 1792 right now, and it's like, I've got some video of it, but you need to do something now, because I don't know what's going on. No, the guy had a machine gun and got the guy to open the door and was pointing the gun at him, and then he got in the back seat of the car, and then the car that was chasing them did a U-turn and they went back towards 1792.
This is a bystander, for lack of a better word, a witness in the car behind mommy. Let's take a listen to more of that 911 call. What do we learn?
Green Honda Acura, an older model, had plastic wrap over the license plate, so I couldn't get a license plate number clearly.
Green Honda, you said Honda or Hyundai?
Honda Acura.
Okay, and you say you saw them westbound. You want to meet with law enforcement, or you just want them to check that out?
I think you guys need to do something. The poor guy's been held up by some guy with a machine gun.
Except it wasn't a poor guy. It's a young mom. Right there, when you see a car, a vehicle going by, and they've got their tag obscured, that's a problem. With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now, straight out to Jennifer Torres, senior investigative reporter, GulfLive.com. Jennifer, thank you for being with us. That's a tip-off right there when you've got a tag obscured. Tell me about that intersection. Where is it?
Well, that intersection is... So she was in Winter Springs, Florida, and that is considered a suburb of Orlando. And it's a busy intersection. She was in the first place to turn, and the car behind her, as we can see, a man got out. It was a brazen crime to do in front of so many people. Obviously, it was caught on video footage, but just as easily, someone could have gotten out of their car and gone over there and gotten involved. So very brazen place to do this, to commit this crime.
Let's take a listen to that last part of the 911 call one more time. I want you to hear what's being said.
Green Honda Acura, an older model, had plastic wrap over the license plate, so I couldn't get a license plate number clearly.
You said Honda or Hyundai?
Honda Acura.
Okay. And you say you saw them westbound. You want to meet with law enforcement, or you just want them to check that out?
I think you guys need to do something. The poor guy's been held up by some guy with a machine gun.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. Irv Brandt, former U.S. Marshals Service International Investigations Branch, author flying solo top of the world on Amazon. Irv, is the 911 dispatch, like, what, asleep? On drugs, watching TikTok? Did you hear what he said? Do you want to meet with law enforcement or do you just want them to check it out? And the guy's like, I think you need to send somebody out here because the victim has been carjacked by machine gun. What's with 911?
Nancy, I don't know. It's almost like the 911 operator wasn't understanding what that guy was trying to tell him, that someone was being carjacked right now, that, you know, there was a weapon involved and he was pointing it at someone in a vehicle. He gave a very clear and concise description of, you know, what he saw. And I don't know what that 911 operator was thinking, like, you know, do you want to meet with law enforcement? No, I don't want to come down to the station and have a conversation about it. I want you to send a patrol unit, you know, right now. You know, this person is in imminent danger.
And let me go straight out to high-profile lawyer Brian Foley, former chief prosecutor in Houston and author of What Prosecutors Don't Tell You. That's upcoming. Brian Foley, thank you for being with us. This is not a spur-of-the-moment thing, Brian Foley. I don't want to hear anything about a crime of opportunity, which somehow, in many people's minds, lessens the intent. This is planned. The carjacker, kidnapper, A, just happens to have a machine gun in his car, and B, is dressed sleuth, ninja style, all in black, black hoodie over his head, wearing a mask. This was planned out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the video speaks for itself. It's outrageous. You can't even believe what you're seeing on there. Somebody with a huge, you know, semi-automatic firearm or fully automatic. We don't even know that yet. But they just go into someone else's car, ramming it. That alone would be an aggravated assault, you know, but this crime now, the way it's played out, I mean, this is a death penalty eligible. It's the most serious type of crime that you have.
Manhunt, a Florida mom kidnapped in broad daylight at a busy intersection. Everybody's just driving by like nothing's happening. You know, another issue to forensic psychologist, author of Dark Sides, Dr. Jeff Kalashevsky, joining us. Dr. Jeff, that moment in your car where you're driving all alone, or God forbid with your children, you look out the driver's window and there's a guy with a machine gun, an automatic weapon, telling you to slide over. You know, there's so many do this, do that, speed off, don't stop, once you're ran from behind, keep your doors locked. But all that, I would imagine, just flies out of your mind when you've got a machine gun shoved in your head. This is a young mom named Catherine Aguavivas. Right there on a regular day, minding her own business, and she's carjacked in broad daylight, Jeff.
Right. Obviously, this kind of intensity of experience is shocking. And a lot of people would sit back and say, well, why didn't she drive away? Well, why did she open the door? But in that moment, you don't have your wits about you, because obviously your anxiety went through the roof. You're concerned about your life and you're in a complete state of shock where you really can't access rational thought about what should I do now?
You know, another thing, Dr. Jeff Kalashevsky, forensic psychologist, Dr. Jeff, people have different types of reactions. For instance, my daughter and my son, twins, couldn't be more different in how they respond. My daughter freezes, and she's no shrinking violet, but she freezes in a moment of emergency. And that, I understand, is a very typical reaction.
Absolutely. And we're talking about just not a common experience, like someone gets hurt. We're talking about your life is on the line, and this is a type of experience you have no reference point for. So immediately, you sort of go into a psychological shock, and it would not be uncommon for people to freeze in this situation and take direction from the perpetrator.
I would love to report that this young mom of a little 6-year-old girl was recovered safely. That is not the case. Take a listen to Seminole County Sheriff Dennis Lima.
April 10th, a tow truck driver was murdered in Orange County. At that scene, a green vehicle matching the description of this green vehicle was located. And there was more than 100 rounds fired at that location. One of the rounds found at the scene were 10-millimeter rounds, which is, again, an incredibly unique and uncommon round for us to see out on the streets.
Very uncommon round to be seen on the streets, a 10-millimeter round. So what does 100 rounds fired at a location, a green Acura, and a missing mom have to do with each other, along with, let me just throw this in, a tow truck? Take a listen to Dave Mack, Crime Online.
Catherine Aguas Vivas is on a road trip from her home in Homestead, Florida, which is south of Miami, to Central Florida to visit with friends. After going through Orlando, Aguas Vivas calls her husband Miguel in a panic. She tells him that she's in Winter Springs and there's a green Acura running into her back bumper. He tells her not to stop, keep driving, but neither of them call 911. At 5:30 p.m., Aguas Vivas stops for a traffic light at the intersection at East Lake Drive and Tuscarawas Road. What goes down next is caught on camera by a witness. A man dressed in all black gets out of the Acura and approaches the driver's side of Aguas Vivas' Dodge Durango and threatens her with a gun. He forces his way inside, climbing into the back seat, forcing Catherine Aguas Vivas to drive. The eyewitness calls 911.
And more. Listen.
Carjacked and kidnapped, Catherine Aguas Vivas drives off toward the Seminole-Orange County line. Less than 2 hours after the carjacking kidnapping, witnesses near a construction site of Boggy Creek Road report hearing gunshots and seeing smoke. Investigators rush to the scene and find an SUV on fire and a dead body inside. Dental records and DNA are needed to confirm that police have just found Catherine Aguas Vivas. Officials find a dozen 10-millimeter handgun shells at the scene and the same type shells found a day before at the murder of tow truck driver Juan Garcia.
Okay, there's the whole issue of ballistics matches. You've got the 10-millimeter rounds found on the scene where her mommy, Catherine Aguas Vivas, Dodge Durango is set on fire. 10-millimeter rounds, okay? Before that, suddenly, sheriffs realize those 10 millimeters match up to another case. Multiple shells, maybe 100 rounds, found a day before at the murder of an unrelated tow truck driver. Now, here's the thing. Anybody on the panel, jump in if you want about ballistics matches. They are like fingerprints. There's only one. Why? When a gun is made, of course, the metal dries. It's hot metal forged into the shape of a gun. It dries. As it dries on the outside of the gun, the metal is polished to look smooth and shiny. On the inside of the gun, it's not touched. So the metal on the inside of the barrel dries with bubbles and disfigurements. As the bullet is hurled at bullet speed down that barrel, it gets what we call striation marks, scratches that only that gun, that individual gun, can leave on a bullet due to the imperfections in the drying process.
That's right. And the striation marks are just like a fingerprint. And you'll get a special report that police will enter into databases that go nationwide so that they can identify guns no matter where they are. Now, it being both in Florida, the 10 millimeter round itself, just that alone is pretty significant. You see a lot of 9 millimeters, you see 357s, 45s, a lot of that. But 10 millimeters special on its own, if that was the only thing they had, that would be important. But having those exact matches towards like the fingerprint analysis of a bullet with those striations, like you mentioned, that's huge. Those are clearly going to be fired from the same gun. You can say that with really good certainty.
And now, out of the blue, the next development, there's a fire. Gunshots are heard. When police approach the scene, they find mommy's Dodge Durango on fire and mommy dead. Dr. Eric Eason joining us, renowned forensic pathologist, consultant, and you can find him online, Eric_A_Eason. Dr. Eason, thank you for being with us. Dr. Eason, explain to me why they were concerned they could not get DNA and thought they would have to use dental records instead. Was it because the body was burned so badly?
That doesn't sound right to me. I've had several bodies found burned, like in a house fire or even a vehicle fire. And during the autopsy, we're usually able to get blood. So I'm not sure what the problem was in this case. So I'm not sure.
Well, question, where do you get the blood if the body is burned to a crisp?
Well, the internal organs in a charred body case are actually pretty well preserved. That was something that was a shock to me when I first started going into forensic pathology. I thought that when a body was severely charred, that all the internal organs would be charred as well, but it's actually not the case. And so when you open the body during the autopsy, there should be blood left in the heart as long as it's intact, and you should be able to get blood from there. And then the other thing is you could always get bone marrow too on a case like this.
When you see bone marrow, Dr. Eric Eason, how does it appear? Is it like blood? Is it thicker? What does bone marrow look like, and how do you extract DNA from that?
It's bone plus immature blood cells, essentially. So we call them spicules, bone marrow spicules. And so you could just take a piece of like the spine, which is going to have a lot of marrow in it, and you're going to have blood cells in there that's going to have DNA that you can extract.
Is that the best place for the body to get bone marrow, the spine?
That's been my experience, yes. Easy to get to.
I'm wondering, because the sheriff is speaking right at the outset when the body's found, and if the body's charred, he may have assumed they couldn't get DNA. But of course, dental records, like ballistics, like fingerprints, are unique to one individual. Explain, Dr. Eason.
Yes. Fingerprints, definitely. Even identical twins are going to have different sets of fingerprints. Each person's going to have their own set of fingerprints they develop when you are, before you're even born. DNA is the same thing. You know, identical twins are going to have the same DNA, but otherwise it'll be unique for each individual. And then dental is going to be very different for each person. We all have cavities and different teeth. And so when the fillings are placed, that's going to be a unique finding in each person.
Don't even start with me on identical twins. I had a carjacked murder, triple aggravated assault at a pawn shop. The big tall perp, who was about 6'4", was 14. Wait, no, he was 13 at the time of the incident. And the two co-defendants, identical twins. Can I tell you how much they tried to blame each other?
Right.
Lucky for me, DNA didn't even matter, but that was my nightmare. That they would have the same DNA. Luckily, one was off in a local jail at the time, so I didn't have to worry about that. But, yeah, good. But that said, let me go to Brian Foley joining us, veteran trial lawyer, criminal defense attorney now, former chief prosecutor in Houston. Brian, dental records, dental schmeckards, doesn't matter. You can show a jury my mouth, my teeth, and you can show, oh, there was a cavity here, there's a crown here, you can see a chip here. It can be identical. You can see it's absolutely the same teeth. They don't care. They want DNA, Brian Foley. They've watched too much TV. They're smarter than all of us put together. You better give them DNA on a silver platter, Foley.
Yeah, you know, ever since I've really been practicing law, juries have been more and more demanding because of what they see on television in shows. I used to make a joke when we were picking a jury that they expected me to extract the blood of the defendant by catching a mosquito that was nearby and, you know, bringing him in for DNA analysis, because that's what they see on TV. When you're a prosecutor trying to prosecute a case, your burden is beyond a reasonable doubt and not beyond all doubt. But I think, you know, when a prosecutor looks at this case, they're going to look at how aggressive and serious and scary this behavior is. And if a jury at all pictures themselves as being a potential victim in something like this, which that's what it looks like, it's something that could happen to just about anybody. it's going to make it easier to put the pieces together if they have dental records or if they have that bone marrow, you know, that they can get. That would be key. Definitely something you'd want to get as a prosecutor.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. You know, Dr. Eric Eason joining us, board-certified forensic pathologist, and Dr. Jeff Kalashevsky, forensic psychologist. Dr. Jeff, did you see all the cars just driving by? Are they blind? Are they just living, going through life with blinders on? They don't notice? There's a guy out on the crosswalk, dressed in black, with a mask on, and a machine gun. Yeah, I mean, thank heaven the one guy behind, I guess taking this video, did see it and report it. But if it hadn't been for that one guy, we wouldn't know the connection to the Acura. We would know nothing. What? Look at all the people just going by. Do-de-do-do. They're like, what's happening? How can they not notice, Dr. Kalashevsky?
Right. In the history of social psychology, they used to do a lot of experiments where they would, the experimenters would create crimes that occurred in public to see if people would respond. And what they found was most of the time people did not respond because they sort of did not feel as much responsibility because there were other people around, but everyone else was sort of feeling the same thing. However, occasionally someone will step up and will try to intervene, or in this case, take a video. But this is, there was a lot of older social psychology experiments where they put forth scenarios like this in public and were fascinated that people didn't feel that responsibility to come to the aid of someone because there were other people around and they were all thinking the same thing.
The terrifying moment, a beloved wife and mom is carjacked at a busy intersection, broad daylight, outside of Orlando. Tonight, we're chasing the clues, manhunt, after this Florida mom kidnapped at the busy intersection. Right now, the only clue police have to hold on to is that green Acura. Listen.
The search for the green Acura ends after investigators find the vehicle at an Orange County apartment complex. Turns out, on March 19th, the same green Acura was reportedly towed by truck driver Juan Garcia from an apartment complex. 3 weeks later, the same green car, according to police, was at the scene when Juan Garcia was murdered on April 10th. The next day, April 11th, the green Acura is seen ramming a Dodge Durango driven by Catherine Aguas Vivas before an unidentified man gets out of the Acura and carjacks and kidnaps Aguas Vivas at gunpoint. Rounds of ammunition found at the scene of Juan Garcia's murder match some rounds found where Aguas Vivas was killed.
But there's something very unique about this particular green Acura. Take a listen to Sheriff Dennis Lima.
What's unique about a 2002 green Acura in the state of Florida, there were only three in the state of Florida. Two had been salvaged and only one existed in the state. When we look at records, the first time authorities came in contact with this was when it was towed on March 19th from an Orlando apartment complex. The car was backed in, parked illegally, probably had no tag on it at the time.
Investigators tracked the car from a family that traded it in last December to being sold at auction. The new owner of the car never finished the paperwork, so the car isn't registered. Police tracked the phone number used in the purchase to the buyer on Facebook. His online name, Jordan Latroy. His real name, Jordanish Torres Garcia, the man who bought the 2002 green Acura. The clothes Garcia is wearing in his Facebook profile photo are identical to the clothes worn by the person who stuck a gun up to Catherine Aguas Vivas and hopped in her backseat.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. But did you hear that tortuous, circuitous line of investigation police went through to track down the green Acura? Joining me, senior investigative reporter, GulfLive.com, Jennifer Torres. Okay, so they see the green Acura on the video the Good Samaritan takes. Okay. Then they find out there are only three such green Acuras in the state of Florida. And, you know, it's really amazing. Hold on just a second. Let me ask Brian Foley about this. Foley, isn't it true, like we always hear about the homicide detectives? Okay, like in Atlanta, they all wear a hat. You can spot them in a suit. You can see them coming a mile away. There are also a full fleet of car theft detectives. Don't poo-poo it. Because car thefts, carjackings, theft by receiving, theft by taking, are often connected to other types of more violent crimes, such as drug trafficking, murders, robberies, rapes, ag assaults. So these guys and women are specially trained. Like, they can look at a car, and based on the taillights, they can tell you the make, model, and year. Because every year or so, your car, let's just pretend it's a Toyota Sienna minivan. Let's just pretend it's a green Acura. Every year or so, they will make subtle changes to the taillights or the placement of the tag. A lot of vehicles now have the tag, especially Land Rovers or utility vehicles, have now moved the tag slot over to the left. It's not in the center anymore. I mean, they're just subtle changes, and that's what we needed right here with this green Acura. We needed that fleet of car theft detectives to tell me what's the make, what's the model, and how many are there in Florida. Help me find the car. Right, wrong, Foley?
Absolutely. So some of the most difficult investigations you can do as a prosecutor or a police officer are for these car-related crimes. There's a lot of rules related to how you're supposed to sell a car, how you're supposed to transfer title. Mainly what these investigators do is they work with chop shops and things like that. But it's an excellent training ground when you have a case like this, when you have to track down a car really quickly. It's not the homicide detectives necessarily who are going to be able to get the most headway there. It's going to be these auto task force guys is what we would call them. And, you know, sometimes they're a little bummed out when they get sent onto that force because everybody wants to be the homicide detective. But the skills they learn there and the expertise they have with identifying vehicles obviously came in very handy in this case.
Jennifer Torres, senior investigative reporter, GulfLive.com. This is what I understand, that the car had been towed from an apartment complex. It was at an apartment complex without a tag visible. The tag had been covered up. So it's been sitting there for a while, this apartment complex, with the tag covered up. So Juan Garcia tows it. And then he ends up dead with about 100 10-millimeter bullets around him in casings. So that's how cops get it to start with, because they find out the car has been towed. When they backtrack, they find out the car had been sold by a family that traded it the December prior. It ended up sold through Facebook Marketplace at auction. The people that bought it never finished the paperwork, so it wasn't registered. So they go all the way back to the guy that sold it on Facebook Marketplace. His name is fake. It was Jordan LaTroy. His real name, Jordanish Torres Garcia. Okay, did I get that right?
Sounds right, yes.
You're going to have a flow chart for this. But it all goes back to the crime scene where Garcia towed the car. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct, right. He towed the car, and that is the car that was used in the commission of the crime that we see happening in Winter Springs.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. A young mom, a beloved wife, carjacked in broad daylight in the Orlando area. What more do we know? Jennifer Torres, investigative reporter, GulfLive.com. I find it very odd and worrisome. Didn't the mom, Catherine, call her husband when a guy comes up and rear-ends her?
Yes. In fact, she did reach out to her husband, let him know what happened. And his advice was to keep driving, keep driving. And that comes from him. He said that's what he told her to do. After that, her phone was disconnected. So there were no further calls after that point, and neither one called 911.
Okay, hold on. What do you mean by that? Her phone was disconnected.
Well, she turned it off.
Okay, I don't like that at all. Did she turn it off, or did the guys who carjacked her turn it off? That doesn't make sense to me, Dr. Kalishevsky.
Well, it could have been a situation where the perpetrator told her to turn off her phone so she couldn't be tracked.
I also find it very odd, very peculiar that nobody called 911. I can understand her calling her husband first, but he didn't call 911. She didn't call 911. The only one that called 911 is the Good Samaritan, and that's where we got that video. So I'm curious about that, but I also want to take a look at her brother, who is so distraught about his sister's murder, he launches his own investigation. Listen to our friends at Crime Online.
Louis Abreu began his own investigation into his sister's abduction and murder. He accessed information on shared computer to track down the last person Catherine Aguas Vivas was talking to the day she was kidnapped. Abreu found his sister was using FaceTime while driving through Orlando. Abreu calls the number via FaceTime, and Giovanni Hernandez answers and tells Abreu that he was talking to Aguas Vivas that day. Abreu takes a screenshot of Hernandez and sends it to investigators.
Okay, I'm curious. Jennifer Torres, GulfLive.com. So the brother is launching his own investigation. So far, I've got two names. I've got the name of the guy, the fake name of the guy that sold the Acura. I've got that. And I've got this name, a guy that was speaking to the victim, the young mom, just before she's carjacked. So how did Catherine's brother get hooked up with someone in LA law enforcement?
That's a good question. I know that, as you say, he was conducting his own investigation. He tapped into social media accounts. They shared an iCloud account. So he was able to access the last calls that she made. And, police said he was doing that on his own. He was trying to find out on his own who was the last person she spoke to, what calls were made, et cetera.
Now, it's my understanding, and this is according to Sheriff Dennis Lima there in Seminole County, that the brother and the deputy in law enforcement were longtime childhood friends. And that is why he reached out to the Orange County deputy. Do you know about that?
I've heard a lot of speculation about that. We know that the deputy was arrested. He has spoken of being a cousin to the family, but that hasn't been confirmed that I'm aware of. So his connection to the family, why he was reaching out to them, it's speculative right now, as far as I'm aware.
Well, question, why is the deputy arrested?
So apparently he was reaching out to the husband of the victim in this case.
Wait, who is he?
He's an Orange County deputy. His name is Deputy Francisco Estrella. And he was arrested on April 14th by Seminole County authorities, facing five felony charges related to wiretapping and using police databases. He, according to the lead investigator for Seminole County, he contacted him using a fake name, claiming he was an Orange County detective and a cousin of the victim, so that he could relay this information to the victim's husband. Why he was doing that, I don't know, but it's against the law.
Okay, so this is what I'm gleaning from what you're saying. The victim's brother contacts a childhood friend within the department. That friend within the department, Deputy Estrella, then contacts the husband to relay the information to him. Okay? This information regards the guy speaking to the wife/mom just before she's carjacked. The deputy used a fake name so as not to reveal he was giving away investigative facts. Do I have that right, Jennifer Torres?
That sounds correct. It's, still being investigated. So there's very little information about it available, but that's what I have so far.
Straight out to investigative reporter Jennifer Torres. Jennifer, the one guy, Jordanish Garcia, has been arrested, correct?
Yes, he has been arrested on unrelated charges. He's a person of interest in this case, and they're currently questioning him, or they have been questioning him since the arrest on Friday.
This is what I know. Jordanish Garcia was identified after his cell phone matches up to the cell phone of a person who purchased the green Acura that was seen ramming Catherine. So we've got Jordanish Garcia's cell phone calling the person that sold the Acura. That's how we've got him connected to the Acura. But that's not all. During a deputy's conference, we see his, Jordanish Garcia's, Facebook profile picture placed side by side with a screenshot of the video showing the armed carjacking. Hold it. And he is wearing the same identical clothing. Look at this idiot, if I'm so bold to call him that. Jordanish Garcia, the carjack killer, according to police. There he is. In his Facebook profile picture, he's wearing the same outfit, the same hoodie with the gold emblazoned on the front, the same hat, the same face covering, the same mask covering, and he's got it as his Facebook profile. Okay, that wasn't hard. Now we have breaking news that has happened as we went to air. To Jennifer Torres, I understand that literally in the last minutes, the other suspect, Joel Hernandez, has turned himself in?
Yes, that's correct. Apparently, last night he turned himself in. He has an active warrant for fentanyl trafficking and marijuana with intent to sell. So as of right now, he is scheduled to make his first appearance today at 2 p.m. So they didn't release any other information other than his booking photo.
This is what we know. Seminole County, Giovanni Joel Hernandez turns himself in at the John E. Polk CI Correctional Institute on a warrant for fentanyl trafficking and marijuana. Okay, this guy is the second perp. How do we know? Cell phone records, I believe, are going to connect him back. Are there fingerprints at the scene of the Dodge Durango fire? I can guarantee you this, out to you, Brian Foley. Somebody's going to turn on the other, but I don't know that police even need it. After that side-by-side matchup, I had a drug trafficker show up in court in the same red leather outfit, jacket and pants, he was wearing the night of the crime. It was described by witnesses, and he wore it to court. I mean, that's like shooting a fish in a barrel, Foley.
I've seen that too. There's some video footage of people showing up to court in the same outfit that is used in the crime. Clothing items are used all the time by police and detectives in this kind of identification process.
Irv Brandt, a former U.S. Marshal who hunts down felons all around the world, this actually happens a lot. They're wearing the same clothes right down to a T.
That's correct, Nancy. In Las Vegas, we investigated a series of armed robberies in the casinos. And how we put them together was the armed robber used the exact same clothes in all of the robberies. Then when we identified the vehicle and we got them, the exact same clothes were in the trunk of the vehicle. It's like they don't think at all when it comes to their clothing.
You know, Dr. Eric Eason joining us, renowned pathologist. Dr. Eason, even though we believe her body was charred, can a rape kit still be performed? I'm curious if one or both of the alleged perps raped or tortured this young mom.
You can still try it and collect the specimens. I just don't know if you're going to get anything from it, but you can still at least try. You know, fingernail clippings, you know, the fingertips are going to be destroyed. You know, but you can still do the swabs and try.
From the vagina, the inside of the mouth, and the rectum, we'll find out if this progresses any further. That's going to take a very, very skilled medical examiner to make that type of an assessment with a charred body. The good news, two defendants now in custody. One just happening in the carjacking murder of this young mom. But in the end, I felt this many times in court. We may get justice, but everybody's going to leave that courtroom with a broken heart. A six-year-old little girl still is calling out for mommy. We stop and remember American hero police officer Joseph McKinney, just 26 years old, shot in the line of duty, leaves behind his young wife and family. American hero police officer Joseph McKinney from Memphis, Tennessee. I want to thank all of our guests for being with us tonight, but especially to you for being with us tonight and every night. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friend.